Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Episode 7, River of Sorrow. Tonight, we're on the case in Platte City, Missouri, 20 miles north of Kansas City. The quiet suburb was shaken to its core when a fun-loving and popular 22-year-old was found bludgeoned to death in the Platte River. The savage crime stunned the tight-knit community and put investigators under an incredible amount of pressure. They believed that until the killer of Alyssa Shippert was caught, no one was safe. June 1st, 2011. It was a hot summer afternoon around 1 when a disturbing call came in to the Platte County Sheriff's Department. A man taking his lunch break along the bank of the Platte River had made a disturbing discovery. Sergeant Russell Smith.
He discovered what he believed to be a deceased female body.
Detectives raced to the scene, which was just a couple of blocks away from the sheriff's office. Prosecutor Eric Zond.
When investigators arrived, we found the body of a young woman, partly submerged by the banks of this river.
When I first saw the victim, she was roughly 10, 12 feet down from where I was standing. She was face down. She only had her bikini top on. There is traumatic injuries to the back of the head. In our minds, we have a homicide.
Investigators were stunned. The murder was the community's first in over a decade, and it was clear the victim had suffered a brutal attack.
The injuries were catastrophic. It was a very, very violent crime.
Detective Mark Stevens.
Whoever this person was had a lot of rage.
When the young woman's body was removed from the water, the mood of investigators grew even darker. Several of the detectives believed they knew the young victim.
Her name was Alyssa Shippert, young gal that worked as a cashier down at the local convenience store there in town.
Most of the deputies on the scene had been Alyssa's regular customers. The 22-year-old was friendly and always had a smile on her face.
A lot of people knew her very well. The convenience store is just two blocks down the hill from the sheriff's office.
Detective Nancy Penrod.
She's a very friendly girl, very outgoing. She had a really upbeat personality. She didn't know a stranger. Why would somebody want to harm her? It just didn't make any sense.
Despite the personal connection, the detectives knew that they had to put their emotions aside and focus on the job at hand. They immediately began searching for clues along the riverbank, and it didn't take long for them to discover where the attack had taken place.
Just upriver from where she was, we saw quite a bit of blood on the bank and some flip-flops.
Alyssa's torn bikini bottoms were found just steps away.
That leads to suspicion that there was some type of sexual motivation involved in what happened.
Officers also found a bag filled with fishing tackle and footprints in the dirt that seemed to lead from the woods to the area where the attack had begun. Based on the evidence, detectives believed that Alyssa was attacked while she was fishing.
definitely a sense that she was attacked from behind. Whether it was ambush or not, don't know for sure. Probably didn't see it coming.
The sheer brutality of the onslaught led police to suspect it had been a crime of passion.
This was not a frank encounter where someone just got upset and hit someone and left. We firmly believe it's someone that she was familiar with. Just because of the amount of emotion and the amount of violence in this attack.
Investigators were troubled that Alyssa's killer may have destroyed any physical evidence he had left.
I was concerned that we would lose the potential of valuable DNA on her body. Any outdoor crime scene is difficult, but an outdoor crime scene that has been exposed to water is much more difficult.
As detectives continued to canvass the area, they quickly discovered Alyssa's truck. Detective Mark Stevens.
Her truck was parked down in the parking lot, backed up.
Sergeant Russell Smith.
Was the only one in the parking lot. Keys are in it. It's not damaged.
Police didn't find anything unusual outside the pickup, nor any evidence that Alyssa's killer had driven it there.
It didn't really look like somebody had placed it there.
While crime scene analysts searched the inside of the truck and a dive team sifted through the murky riverbed for clues, officers braced themselves for the grimmest task of all, notifying Alyssa's family about her gruesome murder. Alyssa's father, Landis Shippert, will never forget the devastating phone call he received from the manager of the convenience store where his daughter had worked.
Her boss at the time was also a city councilman for Platte City. He called me just crying uncontrollably. He said, "You need to talk to the police. It's bad news about Alyssa."
Landis raced to the police station to talk with officers face to face. They eventually confirmed his worst fears. His beautiful and loving 22-year-old daughter had been murdered while fishing along the Platte River. Unfortunately, the officers weren't able to give him any details about the crime.
Nobody knew anything at that point other than the fact that she'd been found.
Landis was crushed. At dinner the night before, Alyssa had invited her father to fish with her at her favorite spot.
I said, "I wish I could, but I had to work, so I couldn't go with her." I was beating myself up because had I went fishing with her that next day, she'd have still been, would have still been alive.
Landis also had to summon the strength to tell Alyssa's siblings that their sister was dead. Alyssa's sister, Pam Clark.
My dad called me, and he said, "Did you hear about the girl that was found?" You could hear him starting to cry on the other end of the phone. And I said, "Dad, who was it?" And he said, "It was your baby sister." And I lost it. I dropped to my knees. I was screaming. People came running out of the building to pick me up off the ground. You know, I'm laid out in the middle of the parking lot, just bawling my eyes out, screaming.
Alyssa's brother, Tristan Shippert.
I couldn't believe it. To find out that that closest person to you is gone, it's like losing a part of yourself you could never, ever manage to get back.
Alyssa's sister, Jill Casey.
It was very difficult. We didn't know anything. Just that she was gone.
As the tragic news sunk in, Alyssa's family confronted a tormenting question. Why would anyone want to hurt the generous, athletic, and fun-loving 22-year-old?
I had no idea. Everybody I knew loved Alyssa. She's just such a great person. She hated seeing people in need. She always wanted to try and find a way to help them.
Alyssa's friend, Christina Kors.
Alyssa Shipper was friendly, and she was beautiful. She loved people.
She would go up to anybody and treat them just like they were your next-door neighbor. I don't think you'd find anybody in Platte City that had any problem with Alyssa.
While Alyssa's loved ones struggle to come to terms with their devastating loss, investigators continue to search the murky waters of the Platte for evidence.
We sent a team of divers in, and they scoured this river, ultimately finding a small hatchet.
Police quickly became confident they had found the murder weapon.
The fact that it was found in fairly close proximity to where the body was found was significant.
The blade of that hatchet was about the length of the lacerations and cuts to the back of her head.
Analysts didn't find any usable fingerprints on the hatchet, but hoped the crime lab's forensic testing might give them a lead. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
It had been in the bottom of the muddy waters for days. We were not able to find any DNA off of that hatchet at all.
Alyssa's torn bikini bottom found at the crime scene had led police to believe that she had been the victim of a sexual assault. But would the medical examiner's autopsy report confirm that?
My suspicions is that it may have been that, but I have absolutely nothing to prove that.
And forensic testing couldn't prove it either. Detectives studied every item discovered near Alyssa's body, hoping for a definitive clue about who had killed her.
It was a massive crime scene with dozens of pieces of potential evidence, but nothing that was ultimately going to lead us to the killer.
We knew from the very beginning that we were going to have some other break to make this case.
Detectives focused their attention on retracing Alyssa's last known movements. Two receipts they discovered turned out to be important leads.
We found receipts of when she bought some fishing bait for that day. We also found receipts at a local gas station where she had gone in and bought some snacks.
The gas station's surveillance system captured video of Alyssa leaving the store just after 2:30 that afternoon.
We see her leaving on her own accord. We know where she's going. She's going out there to where we found her.
The gas station was roughly a 10-minute drive from the crime scene. Interviews with Alyssa's friends revealed she had only planned to fish for a couple of hours.
We knew that evening that she was going to go see a friend of hers around 5 o'clock, and she never appeared.
Based on the timeline they established, investigators concluded that Alyssa had been killed during a rage-fueled attack sometime between 2:45 and 5 p.m. And they firmly believed Alyssa's killer was someone that knew where she was going to be that day.
We definitely felt it had to be someone that she was familiar with.
Detectives knew that meant taking a hard look at everyone in Alyssa's inner circle.
We were lucky in a lot of ways because we pretty much knew everybody in town.
So many crimes are committed by people who are close to others. So that was a natural place to start.
The co-workers, the boyfriends, the known associates, all of this was number one on the list to go find.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment.
What kind of secrets are your neighbors keeping? Who are they, really? Nightmare Next Door, the official podcast based on the hit true crime show from ID, exposes real-life murders that sent shockwaves through small-town America. You'll hear direct audio from the TV series with interviews from witnesses and investigators and finally find out what's going on behind closed doors. Listen to Nightmare Next Door on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
While police began to question those closest to the 22-year-old, they also had to contend with the devastating aftermath of the crime. Alyssa Shippard's brutal murder touched a raw nerve with investigators and the tight-knit community they served. Sergeant Russell Smith.
This case is one of the most violent I've ever seen. The first homicide in over a decade at Platte County, it was an all-hands-on-deck. Everybody was involved in this.
Detective Nancy Penrod.
Everybody's working to try and find justice for her and the answers for her family.
And the pressure to bring Alyssa's killer to justice mounted with each passing day. Fearing a killer was on the loose in their community, locals were shaken. Alyssa's friend, Christina Kors.
The community was on high alert. We had no idea if it was safe to go outside. I thought, this did not just happen in our small town. And why Alyssa?
Sergeant Russell Smith.
People would approach you in the grocery store. Can I go fishing? Can I go out there? Is it safe?
Detective Mark Stevens.
Well, it was so personal. I was afraid the killer was still very close.
Investigators spoke with everyone who had ties to Alyssa.
My partner and I questioned most of those people, what they knew about her. Alyssa was an extremely attractive young lady. Do you have feelings for her? Do you like her?
But Alyssa's popularity and outgoing nature made the detective's job more difficult.
It was really challenging because she often outwardly talked to people about where she was going and what she was doing. So you're talking a large population of people that knew what she was doing because she told them. She just didn't have any fear of people. She wasn't worried that someone's going to harm her like that.
Through the interviews with those who knew Alyssa best, investigators found their first suspect.
There was a on-again, off-again boyfriend. All of the family and friends kept saying, it's him, has to be him.
After their initial investigation into the young man, police felt he was a viable person of interest in the case. According to her friends and family, Alyssa had recently broken up with him.
He did not take the breakup well at all. We felt that he had a lot of motive there because he was so angered with her.
In fact, his behavior had become increasingly more concerning. Alyssa's brother, Tristan Shippard.
He kept driving by up and down past where she lived. He was stalking her. She told him multiple times, leave me alone. I don't want anything to do with you anymore.
Tristan found himself worried for his sister's safety.
It's just one of those things you could tell that person puts off that specific feeling, that aura, you know? You can see it in their eyes that they're not the safest person. I was very concerned. I kept asking her, constantly, you know, go to the police, let them know.
When police followed up on the tip, they learned the young man had been spotted in town that night, and it appeared he had been in a struggle.
The ex-boyfriend was seen late in the evening she was killed at the local grocery store, completely covered in mud.
That report and his stormy history with Alyssa made the ex-boyfriend a solid suspect. And the young man's behavior when he was brought in for questioning only raised more red flags.
We found him to be nervous, didn't want to talk to the police.
Eventually, Alyssa's ex agreed to answer the detective's questions, starting with where he had been between 2:45 and 5 p.m. on the day of the murder.
He said he was out fishing with a friend of his. They were on the Platte River.
Investigators wondered if the young man's story was an attempt to explain away the possibility that he had been seen in the area. He told police that although he was familiar with the location where Alyssa liked to fish, he and his friend had been well down the river that day. Police were skeptical about his alibi, and their suspicions only grew when he mentioned that he had a volatile temper.
He had been asked, you know, when was the last time that you got enraged? And one of the things he described was being so upset that someone had spit sunflower seeds in his car. Alyssa had bought sunflower seeds at 2:30 on her way to go fishing. We continued to believe that we were going down the right track. We thought we were going after our guy.
Investigators asked Alyssa's ex to take a voice stress exam, hoping to find a crack in his story. They were surprised by the results.
He had passed that and did not show deception.
And detectives had no suspects when they confirmed he had been fishing on the opposite side of the river from Alyssa.
Independently, we corroborated that story.
Investigators continued to look at the men in Alyssa's life. And next on the list was a local firefighter she had been quietly spending time with. The nature of his relationship with Alyssa wasn't clear, but detectives were alarmed when they found out the firefighter was a married man.
What more motive is there than the cheating spouse?
Detectives confronted the firefighter about a possible romance.
He admitted that, yes, they were having an affair. They had recently been together.
We asked him what he knew, when did he talk to her, did he know she was going fishing. He was a little bit squirrely, he was a little bit nervous.
Investigators believe the murder weapon, a hatchet, might have come from his workplace.
We figured out that he worked for a concrete business on the side when he was not at the firehouse. That raised more suspicions with us because obviously on the concrete trucks he has different blunt objects. When we searched his truck, we were looking for the hatchets, we were looking for axes, anything that could have caused those injuries.
When questioned by police, the firefighter admitted that Alyssa had invited him to fish that afternoon, but claimed he had declined because he was on duty that day. Police were quickly able to verify his story.
The firefighter also submitted to voice stress tests, and he showed no deception to that and passed that just fine.
With a solid alibi and no physical evidence linking him to the crime, police were forced to rule him out as a suspect. As detectives began running out of leads, the family became troubled by the lack of progress in the investigation.
I was very concerned. I was afraid of it. It'd be years down the road before they ever found out who it was.
Not only was her family mourning the death of their loved one, every day they couldn't help but worry if the killer would strike again. Alyssa's sister, Pam Clark.
A girl that was so well loved in the community was murdered, and they haven't caught her killer yet. The whole city was scared.
The violent crime had sent shockwaves through the community, and the public was demanding justice. Prosecutor Eric Zond.
There was considerable pressure on the sheriff's department and our office to find a perpetrator and bring that person to justice. And I will tell you, we were doing everything we could.
And while that dark cloud hung over the community, detectives also faced another growing fear that Alyssa's killer might strike again. Detective Mark Stevens.
I was afraid someone else was going to be found killed. I was certainly concerned it was going to happen again, and soon.
The mystery deepens after this.
Thank you.
Detectives trying to solve the murder of Alyssa Shippard had no witness nor physical evidence that could connect her killer to the crime scene. And after they had run down every lead, it appeared the investigation was about to go cold. Those working on the case were frustrated. Sergeant Russell Smith.
It felt like you just kind of spinning your wheels.
Detective Mark Stevens.
What can we do? We have nowhere else to go with this.
But then, the Platte County Sheriff's Department got a disturbing call in the middle of the night. And the shocking details they heard forced detectives to wonder if Alyssa Shippard's killer had just struck again. The caller said he had just made a gruesome discovery.
He calls and reports that he heard just light tapping on his apartment door. When he opened that door, this girl is bleeding profusely and has been cut open.
The man said the victim was his 21-year-old neighbor from the apartment across the hall. It appeared she had stumbled to his door near death. Detective Nancy Penrod.
She had been sliced open and her intestines were actually on the outside of her body.
First responders raced to the scene and transported the young woman to the hospital.
The EMS were going, we need to get her to the hospital now. It was described as the fastest load and go that we've seen in a long time.
The unconscious victim had lost a large amount of blood and was not expected to survive. In fact, when detectives looked inside her apartment, they became convinced it was a miracle the young woman had even made it across the hall.
The apartment was an absolute bloodbath. This blood soaked everywhere.
It was truly unimaginable what this victim went through.
Investigators found no sign of forced entry, nor any evidence of a prolonged struggle.
No furniture knocked over, no bed knocked over, nothing. Everything's the way it should be, except for all of the blood.
Detectives quickly ruled out the possibility that the attack had been a robbery gone wrong.
There was electronics. The TV was still on. Her purse was still there. There was money in her purse.
In fact, it appeared there was only one potential motive for the crime.
She was found without any undergarments or pants on.
Detectives on the scene believe she had been sexually assaulted. Police canvassed the apartment building, but they didn't find a single witness who had seen or heard anything unusual that night.
I just couldn't believe it. The walls are very thin. We would expect that somebody's going to hear something. And we went and did the area canvas a couple times. Make sure we talk to everybody we can talk to. But nobody heard anything.
As detectives studied the totality of the crime scene, they reached a chilling conclusion. They were convinced the horrifying attack was connected to Alyssa Shippard's unsolved murder.
It is knowing that community and what is normal and what is not. You know, and to go over a decade with no homicides and then all of a sudden, two, same body type, same age range, female, both found undressed from the bottom down, both violently attacked, both with no sign of forced entry or struggle. It's got to be tied together.
It was the violence. I pretty much instantly felt like the two were connected.
And the evidence in both cases indicated the young women had known their attacker. Investigators were certain that no woman in Platte City was safe until the man responsible for the two attacks was caught. Prosecutor Eric Zond.
Anytime you want to try to assume, you're at risk of guessing wrong. But I knew this. A person who would commit the crime that was committed was a very, very dangerous person. And we needed to find that person and find that person as quickly as we could.
Detectives believe their best chance of solving the case required a miracle. The survival of a young woman who was still clinging to life in the hospital. While she was placed in a medically induced coma, investigators and loved ones anxiously held on to hope that she would somehow pull through. And miraculously, their prayers were answered. 4 days after the attack, the 21-year-old was strong enough to speak with detectives.
She remembered being in her apartment. She remembers a friend of hers, Quentin Odell, being the last person there.
And the young woman believed it had been Quentin Odell who had tried to kill her. Investigators were stunned.
We're standing at the foot of the bed, and she goes, Quentin Odell was there. But I looked at Russ, and the bell went off.
The pieces of a complicated puzzle suddenly fell into place for Detective Stevens. He knew the name Quentin Odell had also come up during the investigation into Alyssa Shippert's murder. Odell was one of her co-workers at the convenience store. But at the time, police found no evidence he was involved in the crime.
He was interviewed, just as all other co-workers of hers were interviewed.
Detectives listened carefully as the young woman shared the rest of her horrifying story. She said, Odell arrived at her apartment around 11:30 that night.
She recalls having a couple of drinks, but the amount of drinks that she'd had that night were not anything excessive from anything that she normally would have.
The young woman said that while Odell was there, she had a heated argument with her boyfriend over the phone. Her memory of what happened after she hung up with him was hazy.
She recalls going to sleep, fully clothed, in her own bed, in her apartment. Quentin Odell was there, the last she remembered.
The victim had no memory of being attacked, but she did remember waking up several hours later in intense pain.
She got up and went into the bathroom, turned the light on, and saw the traumatic injury to her own body and stumbled out into the hall where she collapsed.
Quentin Odell, a quiet computer enthusiast who had grown up in Platte City, seemed like the last person who would have committed these heinous crimes. But the young woman's story made Odell the prime suspect in both savage attacks. When Detective Stevens and Sergeant Smith brought him in for questioning, he still had no idea that the young woman had survived her catastrophic injuries. And almost immediately, his tone and demeanor convinced them they were on the right track.
You know what happened to her, right? I've heard that she got cut open and had her organs hanging out.
Odell told police he had visited the young woman around 11:30 that night. He said she spent most of their time together arguing with her boyfriend. Odell claimed when he left at 1:30, she was expecting another visitor.
You don't know who it was that was coming. You don't know when they were coming.
Those on the case were confident Odell was lying and intently listened for any discrepancies in his story.
He sat there very cold, devoted to his answers. He wasn't going to give you anything unless you pried it out of him.
Then detectives dropped their bombshell. They told Odell not only was the young woman alive, she was also talking.
I just kind of see that little eye twitch of, what'd you say? You know, just kind of that, oh no.
Investigators Stevens and Smith turned up the pressure on Odell, hoping he would confess.
I said, you know, everybody's got a ghost. I said, so what was your ghost?
The detective immediately sensed he had hit on something.
If you try to suppress a feeling somewhere, it's like a ghost man in the closet. And, well, it's empty in the closet, baby. And you need that pressure relief valve, okay? You gotta let it out.
It wasn't long after that that he finally admitted to doing the attack.
Odell's confession was unlike any either detective had ever recorded.
It was the strangest interview that I think I've ever been through, because I've never had a sociopath tell me exactly what happened.
Odell claimed the young woman's heated conversation with her boyfriend had been the trigger for his violence.
He says that he finally just got so enraged with hearing this screaming and hollering that he grabbed a razor blade and attacked her.
Odell said he found that razor in the victim's apartment.
She had just moved in, so she had one of those box cutters.
Detectives listened in horror as Odell described the rest of the gruesome attack.
One of the other things that you can remember about this is watching her roll over in pain and then watching, like, her intestines and stuff fall out.
Odell never admitted to his sexual assault of the victim, but DNA evidence police recovered ultimately revealed the truth. Detectives believe it was just one of the details missing from Odell's story.
What I also feel is missing is, how can Quentin cut her up the way he did and her not scream? He have slipped something in her drink that would make her unconscious. That would make it make sense.
In the end, the hospital didn't recover any evidence that Odell had drugged the young woman. Still, investigators believe they had enough to charge Odell with the brutal crime. And they wondered if he might also be ready to reveal the truth about his role in the murder of Alyssa Shippert.
What was going on in the back of my mind after that first confession was, when do we change gears?
And everyone on the case knew exactly how much was riding on that next phase of the interview. Prosecutor Eric Zond.
We knew there really never would be any physical evidence that would directly connect Quentin Odell to Alyssa Shippert's murder. If we were going to make the case against Quentin Odell, it was going to have to occur in that interrogation room.
The two detectives used the rapport they had established to get Odell to talk about Alyssa Shippert's case.
Are you ready to talk about what happened?
After we got through the emotions, then it was, okay, what happened with Alyssa? You know, what caused all these demons to bust out of your closet with Alyssa? And then we get into his story of how he ended up out there.
Odell told the detectives, on the afternoon of Alyssa's murder, he was bored and decided to walk down to the river.
This is not uncommon for him. To go out into the conservation area, looking at the squirrels, going out for a country walk, going out to play on the river. He goes down the embankment and comes upon his co-worker fishing there on the Fly River bank.
Odell said the two of them talked for hours while Alyssa fished. Then, in Odell's bizarre account, he claimed that he frightened Alyssa by falling into the river.
He loses his footing, falls in, ends up floating downriver a little bit, but finally he gets his footing and gets himself back up out of the river. He comes up behind Alyssa, who he describes as screaming. thinking that Quentin had drowned.
Odell claimed when Alyssa realized he was safe, she became hysterical.
He describes that in her panic, in her scared emotional state, she proceeds to start slapping him. Like, don't ever do that again. You scared me. Don't ever do that again.
Odell said Alyssa's reaction sent him into a rage. He grabbed the hatchet hanging from his belt.
He says he grabbed it and smashed into the back of her head.
All I remember is picking up the axe, then I just heard the sound of bone shattering.
The detectives then laid out the crime scene photographs and asked Odell where he hit Alyssa.
And in the calmest, most chilling voice you've ever heard, he said, well, I did that one, and I did that one, and all Russ and I can do is sit there and just listen. I was horrified.
In the back of my mind, it's just anger. You know, it's just sheer anger of why would you do this to this wonderful young lady that had everything going for her.
Without any emotion, Odell had confessed to committing the gruesome crime. But once again, his story appeared to be missing critical details. Police believe there was little doubt Odell had planned the attack.
He admitted that he had this emotional interest in her, but he had never acted on it.
He knew she would be out there fishing. He knew exactly where she'd be.
And police were confident that Alyssa's torn bikini bottom indicated that Odell sexually assaulted her during the attack.
She's found with no underwear on. It's my opinion, I think, that he was shot down by an advancement, and he got upset. But that's just my personal opinion.
Odell was later brought to the crime scene, where he explained his version of the murder on videotape.
Where was she standing?
She would have been standing about here.
So you remember your hatchet going into the back of her head? Is that a memory you had?
Because I remember.
What do you see?
At that point, I see her hit the ground and all the blood start gushing out.
When you talk to most people about their demons, you see some emotion, and not with him. And when it came to the confession, it's like, yeah, I hit her with the hatchet, and I mean, it just flatlined the whole time.
On January 5th, 2012, Quentin Odell was arrested for the murder of Alyssa Shippard. He was also charged with the attempted murder and sexual assault of the young woman he had attacked in her apartment. Alyssa's family was stunned by the news. They believed Odell was Alyssa's friend. Alyssa's father, Landis Shippard.
I just couldn't fathom that he was the one that did it. He never appeared to be an aggressive person. I was just astounded. I was angry. He was at Alyssa's funeral.
Alyssa's brother, Tristan Shippard.
I was completely blindsided. Never once did I ever suspect he was the one that did it. He seemed like one of the nicest, sweetest guys you could ever know. He was always calm. I mean, yeah, he was a little awkward, but he was always very kind and courteous. I could not reconcile the fact that this is the same man.
When investigators searched Odell's apartment, they found evidence that he had actually been obsessed with Alyssa. He had a box full of photos of her, as well as a collection of newspaper clippings about her murder. But police never needed to present that evidence in court. Odell ultimately pled guilty to both of the savage crimes. He was sentenced to 2 life terms without the possibility of parole. Alyssa's father, Landis, was satisfied with the outcome.
It was calming that it was finally coming to an end and Alyssa was going to get justice.
The Shepherds and investigators looked for signs of remorse in Quentin Odell, but instead saw only a cold and detached young man.
I think he's dangerous, deranged, sick.
Quentin Odell has got to be one of the most terrifying suspects that I've ever prosecuted, because you first look at him and you think, I don't think a guy like that is capable of doing something like this. And that's truly terrifying, because the reality of it is that people who can perpetrate these really horrific attacks don't necessarily look the way you think they might look. They can be anybody. And in this case, that anyone was Quentin Odell.
Since Odell's conviction, Alyssa's family has focused on finding a way to move forward. They try to remember Alyssa for her kind heart and vivacious spirit.
I think she would want me to just remember her how she was. I believe she would love the way that she's honored right now.
She had a beautiful smile. I miss her so much.
Landis Shepherd says there's not a day that goes by that he doesn't think of his special and beautiful daughter.
I miss her terribly. All the time we spent fishing together and just on a riverbank, just doing nothing but enjoying each other's company.
She was funny. She was full of charisma. She just had this light to her. She was such an amazing person. I'm sorry. I would give anything to hear her voice one more time.
After Odell's conviction, a search of his belongings made investigators believe he might have already been targeting his next victim, and they are convinced they put a serial killer in the making behind bars. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.